All right, guys, welcome back to the Build Show podcast. That's right. This is my weekly time to get together with you guys and go deep. And today's topic is going to be a lot of fun. I've got with me Whit Smith. Whit is a second generation engineer, and we're going to go into a bunch of different fun topics on house engineering and some things that Whit and I have done in the past and some recommendations for you. But before we get there, I want to say big thanks to our sponsor this week, which is Warmboard. If you're not familiar with these guys, I first saw them when I visited Canada a couple years ago, and there was this green decking down that looked like it had an aluminum face and these channels through it, and come to find out, that was my first experience with Warmboard. Warmboard is a manufacturer that makes warm floor systems, heated floor systems, but they're totally different than all the systems I've seen in the past. Most warm floor systems are grab these parts from all these different locations and put it together, and hopefully the HVAC contractor, the plumber, the mechanical guy on site gets everything right. On the other hand, when you order Warmboard, you order an engineered total system where everything, all the parts and pieces, including now the boiler, comes from Warmboard. Very impressive system, much better results, but really ultimately more reliable and frankly easier for the install crew because the Warmboard folks have engineered everything. Anyways, lots to learn there. Go to their website to learn more about Warmboard. But in the meantime, let's get back to today's podcast with Whit Smith, all about engineering. Let's get going. All right, friends, I've got with me Whit Smith. Whit is an engineer. How many years have you been engineering now, Whit?
17.
Dang, long time. And Whit, you're a unique breed. You're among my friends that I know who are a second generation in their trade or in their field, meaning your dad's also an engineer. And you actually still work with your dad to this day, right?
Yes, sir.
Still part of the firm. Mm-hmm. And I can think of several of my builder friends that are second generation builders. For instance, Jake Bruton, built a friend of mine out of Missouri who shoots videos on our network. Jake's dad's a builder. He grew up in the building industry. And Jake, even though, actually, I don't know how old Jake is. I bet he's, 42? I always think of him as 10 years smarter or wiser. And I think a lot of that is because he has this kind of embedded knowledge of having been around his dad, who was doing building for all those years, being on job sites, understanding things that I, as a first-generation builder, I didn't necessarily have that head start. Now, nowadays I have a little more gray hair on me, which helps as I approach 50 this year. I've been in the business since 95. So I've got, just shy of 30 years of construction experience. But I think you, even though you've been doing this 17 years, I think of you as that engineer who's got three decades of experience with.
Well, I appreciate that.
Before we get into specifics on residential engineering, and we might even talk a little bit about my house that you engineered for me, let's first talk about alternative building systems. This is a question I get all the time. Matt, what do you think about this type of construction? And insert whatever type, meaning not standard framing, not typical stick-framed construction. And what do you think about that? So I know this is a super broad question, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on alternative building systems in general, whether it's, insulated concrete forms or some type of alternative block system or, some type of panelized SIPS framing, structural insulated panels, that sort of thing. I'm sure you've touched a lot of those alternate systems over the years, haven't you?
Yeah, we've worked on at least several of each of the type you just described. And I guess, would you consider a conventional system to be wood framed, either stick framed or trussed roof, plywood sheathing, or are we agreeing that that's what we're considering is typical common construction?
I would say that's right. Now you engineered my house and I came to you and said, hey, Whit, I want to do kind of quote unquote normal framing, but I want to use abnormal materials. So for instance, my house has all LVL studs in it, mm-hmm. which is not a standard 2x material, right? It was I used 2x4 framing, 16-inch on center, and I used those LVL studs. I used I-joists for my floor joists, and then you also engineered a really cool, in effect, truss system for my attic, which we actually made a great video on, which, by the way, has done awesome. But it's really kind of normal looking in terms of framing, where the guys take a pile of lumber and they turn it into a house.
I'm thinking alternative meaning SIPS panels, which often I think of as a sheet of OSB on the inside and the outside with some type of foam and maybe a minimal amount of structure on the inside, or insulated concrete forms, which are like Lego blocks that you pour concrete in the middle of. That's kind of more what I'm thinking of.
I don't know if this is something we've ever talked about, but I actually personally built my first house out of SIPs.
Did you really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
It was recycled steel from an HEB that had been taken down. My neighbor got a lot of the scrap, so I went and picked through his scrap pile, steel framed the house, and then ordered a SIPs package and built that on top of the steel frame.
Wow.
So I actually have some experience with that, some hands-on experience. That was back in about 2007.
Okay, so it's been a couple of years ago.
It's been a while.
Texas-based SIPs supplier?
It was a group out of Kerrville. At that time, they were called Chapman. Yeah. They were later called Geophase.
They're not in business anymore.
And I don't believe they're around anymore.
I built one of theirs too.
Yep. They were great people. I loved the product. They were extremely enthusiastic about it. I built this house at a time. Well, there was a lot of change in the industry. We were really looking at more and more green technologies. Energy efficiency was really coming on big around then.
Yep.
We were coming out of the 90s and 2000s where I think we would say this conventional construction we're talking about had maybe lost some popularity, and not because the construction itself had an issue. It was just the way it was being done.
Yeah.
The air sealing, waterproofing, we were seeing lots of issues with that. Yeah. So my mentors, the engineers I worked around, were really, I think in their minds, moving away from wood conventional systems, looking at new light gauge steel options, ICFs, some of these, what we would consider alternative systems. So that's the environment I was in. And it really had me thinking like, well, I want to be on the front end of this, you know, so I want to be a part of it. I want to learn from it. So I built an ICF house. And what was interesting, I thought it would save me time because I was doing this myself at nights and weekends. So in my mind, I had this little kit of panels that were going to arrive and I was going to put them up and boom, I was going to have a building shell. I vividly remember when that truck pulled up with the SIPs. I was the only one on my property. It was late one Friday evening. Semi pulls up with all these SIPs panels on it, and I was sitting there, you know, all excited, looking at my new delivery of SIPs.
You're like, no.
And the guy, and I asked the guy, how do you unload those? And he said, no, that's your job to unload those. And I was not at all prepared for it. As luck would have it, my next door neighbor had a big off-road forklift that barely ran.
Oh my God.
So I went and borrowed it. You know, the driver was courteous enough to stay late into the evening while I unloaded this thing. This house was elevated. I was building. So he left. I'm sitting there with a pile of SIPs, rain coming in. I'm covering them up so they won't get wet.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this was a huge investment for me as a young person to have ordered these materials.
And now they're sitting there in the yard, potentially getting wet.
And I'm trying to figure out how in the world I'm ever going to lift these things up and put them into place.
Yeah.
You know, so long story short, I ordered a Skytrak.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't rent it to me because I was just an individual kid, essentially, at the time. But a friend who had a company rented it for me under his license. I got the building up, and it all, long story short, it went well for us. I mean, it was a good, viable house.
And a Skytrak, for those of you who don't know, is like a four-wheel version of a telehandler with an extending boom, usually a forklift arm. So you could, in effect, take those SIPs panels, hook a strap around them, and lift them up into place and almost act like a mini crane, right?
And that's exactly what I did. And I had to recruit all my buddies for two weekends in a row while I got this thing put together. So I had to call in a lot of favors.
You build it in two weekends, though, with those SIPs panels?
That's impressive. I should add, it was only about 1,000-square-foot house.
Okay,
so it was pretty small.
Yeah.
In a simple gable, real simple rectangular geometry.
Yep.
And so it went well. At the end of the day, everybody asked, you know, how do you feel about SIPs?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't. I think I could have done it much more easily and cost effectively had I just done conventional framing.
For sure.
So that was I could have framed the walls pretty quickly, sheathed them, insulated them. Some of the trades struggled a little bit when they were installing.
Mm-hmm.
I did the electrical ourselves. I had a plumber come help me with the plumbing.
That's awesome.
They really had a hard
time. Still live in this house today?
I live next door to it.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, it was on a little bit of acreage. We sold it, and I paid somebody. I hired a builder. I learned my lesson from building my first house to design this next house for me, or to build this next house. Anyway, house is doing great. Still there.
That's awesome.
But That was a personal experience with a different type of building system. So
I have a pretty similar story about another SIPS project. Sounds like the same manufacturer. They're not in business anymore, so we're not disparaging anybody who's currently out there. But my story was not too dissimilar to yours, where, you know, when you read the marketing, it says, oh, you're going to frame this 40% quicker. And so you budget for 40% less framing. And then let's say it takes you the same amount of time or 10% less. You're like, dang it, I'm 30% over budget on framing labor. Because in my mind, some of the alternative building systems, they have a lot of marketing hype. They have a lot of buzz and they have a enthusiastic manufacturer, oftentimes like me, an enthusiastic builder. But we just don't have great depth of experience and wisdom doing it. And so I think that if you're going to utilize alternative building materials, they can be wonderful, but you have to be really cautious about your expectations, your budget, what you're expecting them. Really important to talk to people that have done them in the past so you can gain their wisdom, right? Just like your panel showed up and you're like, all right, great. Now, how do you get them off? He's like, what do you mean, me? You're getting them off. I think we probably experienced the same thing. Although luckily I had a Skytrack on the job, but it's those things with alternative building systems. Whereas our country has amazing lumber resources. You know, God's gifted us with massive forests. And oh, by the way, those forests are cut down and regrow every 20 years. And now we've gotten really good at converting fast growth trees into 2x4s. And in Texas, where we are, they come from East Texas. They cut down those pines and they bring them to where we are in Central Texas, and they don't even have to go very far. And then there's a, you know, there's a Huber plant up in Oklahoma that's making our, you know, Advantech and our Zip sheathing, let's say. So it's close natural resources, and we know exactly how to put those sticks together to build a really tight house, a really efficient house, and also a pretty cost-effective house. And then when you layer on top of that, companies like Builders First Source are doing ready frame projects. I don't know if you know much about this, but this is their program where they can, instead of just making your trusses, which, by the way, there's great truss manufacturers out there like BFS that can do all the engineering for you and drop floor and roof trusses off to your job that go up really easily and quickly and perform really well. Now they can pre-cut all of your framing too with a little inkjet labeling system that says this pack is wall A and this is your king, this is your jack, and all of your studs come off a stud pile such that you can actually frame quicker but still with conventional framing. And so, you know, even though I've tried almost every alternative system, I haven't gravitated to using them more than once or more than some one-offs.
I definitely don't have an aversion to the alternate type systems, and we have others coming up, and we'll always be working on them. I like doing new things, but I'm really still a big fan of conventional construction.
I see it
work so well. We did ICF house last year, and we couldn't find a contractor in Central Texas who was familiar with the work in order to do it. We finally found a person out of Bernie, and they came and built it. What was unique about it, if you're using a different system other than what we were calling a conventional system, you almost have to design the project around the system, I feel like.
Yeah.
This one we did was an oval-shaped house out of ICFs, and they did a good job with it, but...
Oval-shaped?
Yes.
Interesting.
It was almost like an ellipse in plan. And as you can imagine, setting up all the blocks...
Square blocks.
Trying to make an oval out of it, it really didn't lend itself well to it. So they got it to work. You know, it turned out nice. The owner was thrilled. Yeah. But I suspect there was quite a premium with that.
Yeah.
And
to get that shape.
You know, within our office, we have these same conversations. My dad is a big ICF guy. His dream is to retire to an ICF house one
Interesting.
Day. So he was also one of the ones advising me about all the new technologies as a young person when I did the SIPS house. So this is a little friendly disagreement we have. You know, he doesn't have a problem with conventional construction. He appreciates it as I do. He built his own house in 1984. He and my grandpa built it.
Cool.
As we were talking about earlier, they did the visqueen on the inside of the house. At the time, that was believed to be the correct way to do it. But we soon found out that was not.
Nope. They remodeled the wrong side.
He remodeled that house about 10 years ago, and we opened up all the shower walls, all the bedroom walls, and surprisingly, the framing looked beautiful. Even so done incorrectly. Awesome. So I, as part of this resilient. Debate, as part of this debate we have, I was giving him a hard time. I said, so this system that you accidentally did incorrectly that you don't like
still worked.
Is performing so well,
yeah.
You know, so. One thing he did do well that I thought was really ahead of the curve was they put exterior insulation on that whole house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. No condensation possibility really on the inside.
Yeah.
And he probably did. He probably had more conventional architecture, too, meaning some overhangs, less less exposure, let's say, on his exterior walls, some moisture issues, that sort of thing.
Is they that definitely true? Did. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was when we designed my house and then I took it to you for engineering. And you visited, you know, I got a 2-foot overhang everywhere in my house. And even though I knew I was going to have top notch crews out there and I was going to be watching it, I thought, well, if the water doesn't hit the building to begin with, then I'm not as relying on perfection in all my systems to keep water out. So it's one thing that I talk about a lot is, you know, I do a lot of modern architecture. I end up building a lot of those houses and we're good at it, but they just have less forgiveness. Whereas more forgiving architecture means you have less need to be perfect and less need to use the most expensive, robust material ever to waterproof, to roof, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, I agree.
So interesting you mentioned that your dad made that mistake on the Visqueen. Let's break that down real quick because I've seen this a lot as I've remodeled on 90s and 2000s houses. That I've remodeled over the years. I've done a couple of de-Tuscan jobs, including one that I worked on with you, which now a famous podcaster with the last name starting with R lives in that you all know. I guess it's okay to say. So Joe Rogan lives in a house that we remodeled and then our clients sold and you did the engineering on that. That house had Visqueen inside the walls. We ripped it all out. We did find some areas where there was some mold growth in that house, but it was where there was kind of extra water intrusion in the walls. And where there was not water intrusion, there was no issues. I mean, the beauty of standard 2x4s and let's say standard plywood is that it can absorb a lot of water and then give it off slowly over time. And as long as it's not getting more water, as long as the rate of wetting doesn't exceed the rate of drying, those houses do just fine, just like your dad's house. Mm-hmm. You know, you can make a mistake and wood has some extra forgiveness in it. Mm-hmm. Whereas ICF, for instance, if you have an ICF house and you don't waterproof it correctly, once that water gets in, it's really hard to fix those issues in the future. And the more exposed house, the more chances there could be problems. And so to wrap up the alternative building systems, my thought to this day is, hey, if you have a need or a desire to use an alternative system for a particular reason, go for it. Try to find the most knowledgeable people. Try to find people that have done it on more than one occasion. It's kind of the same thing I say when I think of when people ask me about more modern HVAC systems. I liken it to the Toyota Prius. Amazing car, gets amazing gas mileage, but you can't be any old technician in America who's worked on 70s, 80s, or 90s cars and walk into the hood of a Prius and know what you're doing. You know, you have to have some computer skills. You have to have some specialized equipment. You have to understand how the batteries function. So even though it's got a steering wheel and four wheels, it's not the same animal as what a car that was built 30 years ago had. Same with houses. If you're building an alternative building system, remember, that's the Prius of houses. And you need to have people that are certified, that have the wisdom and the knowledge and understanding of how to build a Prius compared to just how to build a car with four wheels and a steering wheel.
Agreed. And the only thing I would add is know the limitations of the alternative system you're using and design the house to match that. And if it doesn't match, then maybe don't choose that system.
100%. And an example of that I would tell you is I've done two houses now with a company called Benson Wood. Do you know those guys?
Oh, I did both of those with you.
Okay, sorry, I totally forgot. Okay, so one of those is under construction now. It's a project we're doing out of town on a ranch. And the design for it is very in fitting with what their system's good at. And if you're not familiar with Benson Wood, they're an old timber frame company. Ted Benson started the company like in the late 70s. He's still around, the founder of the company that's named after. And they have a really unique SIPS panel, which I think is super cool in that they use, and correct me if I'm wrong, they use I-joists as studs in their walls. They do them on probably 24-inch centers, and then they dense pack the cellulose in there. They solid sheath them on the outside with zip sheathing. They solid sheath them on the inside with OSB, and then they tape the OSB with a really high-quality tape, like a Sega tape, and on the outside, they're taped for both air tightness and water tightness with zip products. And now you've got a wall cavity that's maybe 10, 12 inches thick, dense pack cellulose, super airtight, and craned into place in very big sections. Have you been out to that job since we dried it in? We're in mechanical.
No, right now. I'd love to see it.
It's looking amazing. The last project we did, though, which was now been a couple of years ago, was a Lake Austin house right on the water that was designed by Amit and Plum out of Boston. And they were so smart about the project in that they were really trying to do a very fast timeline for their customers. And so they designed around the limitations of Benson wood. In other words, no curved walls, right? All square boxes, very simple, straightforward roof lines because the roof panels are also Benson wood I-joist panels that are craned into place. And man, that house came together super fast. We framed that house in like, I want to say around 2 weeks start to finish. This last one took us 3 or 3.5 weeks, bigger project, more buildings. But to think about going from a bare foundation to a fully dried in, ready for mechanicals project in 2 to 4 weeks, that's unheard of in today's market, right?
Oh, it's really fast. And I also remember on the house there on Lake Austin, structurally, the house actually really made sense to me. It was for us, it was a pretty simple thing to design. Mm-hmm. We don't design the Benson wood product themselves, but we designed the anchorage to the foundation, and then we designed the foundation.
Gotcha.
They provided us the loads, and we designed those anchors.
Yeah.
And it was a really straightforward, simple system.
And for me as a builder, having built that first Bensonwood house and now a second one, it's been fun to work with them because I've actually learned a lot from them. They're a much older, wiser company than me, having started in the 70s. They went to Europe and kind of learned about air tightness and interior air barriers versus exterior air barriers. So, you know, they on that very first house I did with them 6-7 years ago, they were tenacious about air sealing, and they had these special gaskets, like double bulbed sill gaskets that were some European company. They were incredibly smart about where panels came together with using specialized tapes and sealants in those spaces. And as a result, that was a super efficient, super tight house that just went together easily. And years later, still looks like the day it was born. You know, it's functioned super well for those clients. And so that's a great example of getting the engineer, getting the architect, and getting the builder together early and really thinking about how the project is going to be designed in a buildable, smart fashion. I wish we did that more often. We don't always get to do that, do we?
Well, like you say, you got to get together early on those, because some projects, the strategy now is get the foundation going, and then we'll work on some other aspects of the project while that's going in.
You know, is that happening for you now?
Oh yeah, quite a bit. I mean, quite a bit. We're seeing requests to see a foundation package issued. You know, and in all fairness, the foundation, take the Bensonwood house out east of town that we're working on. That was a big foundation. It took a long time to get that in. So when these houses have gotten so large, the project's so large, so many consultants, if they can get comfortable with the idea of getting the foundation started and enough information so that all the systems are in place in the foundation that need to be there, well, that might buy the team another 3 or 4 months to work on other aspects of the home.
Interesting.
The only thing we don't want to do is change the footprint, because that's kind of a big deal at that point. And you better hope you have everything in the foundation that you need to have in there.
You don't want to remodel your brand new foundation.
No, and you might be surprised how often we do that. But with the Bensonwood system, there's not a lot of time in between to be designing, you know, because when the building arrives, it goes up pretty quick and they move on to the next phase. So
that's right.
There's a lot more planning on the front end of those, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. Let me switch gears a little bit. And I'm going to feel free to tell me you can't answer this if I'm putting you on the spot. But like my personal house that we just finished 6 months ago, it was a remodeled slab. So you didn't you weren't a part of designing slab. It was a 70s slab. And then we basically ended up framing a brand new house on an old slab, meaning there was no anchor bolts to speak of that we could use. We ended up bolting the house, the new framing down with a Hilti screw. I can't remember the exact, you probably know the exact name of the product.
We used the Simpson Titans on that one.
That's it, Simpson Titans. We just had a tornado blow through town. And I was out of town, actually. I was on a video shoot. My wife called me and was like, oh my gosh, we're having tornado watches in town. You know, where should I go in the house? And, you know, the classic find an interior wall. I didn't have a storm shelter built in this house. But I did wonder, like, if my 70s neighborhood got hit, that I know pretty much the whole neighborhood is thermoply sheathing and pretty light 70s construction. How would my house fare in really high winds compared to my neighbors with the type of framing and the type of hold downs that I used?
This is getting a little bit outside of my area of expertise. We do a lot of new design and not a lot of forensic type work.
Yeah.
There's actually a firm down the hall from us that specializes in forensics work.
Oh, so really? Interesting.
When the tornado came through recently, I mean, I saw them the next day and they were all gearing up for long days of work ahead of them as they go and investigate all of those. So a lot of what I hear about this comes secondhand from those types of offices. But hold downs are huge. I mean, it makes all the difference in a home. Hmm. It keeps the mode of failure so often is the roof lifting off. Mm-hmm. There's not a continuous load path where the roof trusses, let's say, are anchored to the walls, mm-hmm. and the walls are anchored to the foundation.
Yep.
So if you miss any one of those parts of the load path, that's going to be a huge contributing factor to why a home might fail. One thing that's not really accounted for so much is in a tornado is all of the projectile type damage or windblown debris type damage.
Right.
So that's why you're going to want to get into the interior of the house. Mm-hmm. Not so much because you're worried about your roof coming off necessarily,
right?
But
a 2x4 coming through a window,
through your wall. Yeah. So you need to get protection from those. So while you might suffer cosmetic damage to the outside of the house, mm-hmm. there's a much higher likelihood that your home could withstand an event like that if it's properly built.
Yeah.
Now, I suppose it's important to understand that we don't design homes to resist tornadoes.
Sure.
The wind loads we use aren't that high. I think it would be, I believe it's economically unviable to design every home in America to resist a Category 5 tornado.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's why they have storm shelters. But
on the other hand, would it have been smart for me to, instead, I can't remember what you specified. Let's say you had those Titan anchors at every 4 feet on center. Would it have been prudent for me or someone who's like me who likes to over-engineer or overdo things to go, well, I'll just take the engineer's specs and go every 2 feet instead of every 4 feet?
Would
that provide enough additional benefit to be worth the money in your mind? Or is it more like, gosh, that certainly provides some amount of safety, but I just don't know if the value's there?
We get asked that a lot, actually, in different aspects of building. And the answer is, well, I usually say yes. If a homeowner's saying, is this better? The answer is better. And a lot of times it just gives them some added level of comfort.
Sure.
It's easy to quantify the cost of it. The builder can tell them how much it'll cost. Right. And then they
decide, $1,000, is that worth my comfort? Hey,
if they sleep better at night, then it's worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, I don't think it's really necessary. I haven't seen homes failing because the anchor bolts were only spaced 4 feet on center.
Mm-hmm.
The code actually asked for them at 6 feet on center.
Okay.
But I see the industry using 4. We've always called out 4. So there's a little bit of a improvement there over a code minimum. So that's good. But we see it a lot. People ask about studs. You know, if we go from a 2x4 to a 2x6, is it better? Well, structurally, it might not be necessary. There's a lot of good reasons for insulation and others to do it. But certainly, if they're interested in doing it, I would encourage them to.
Yeah.
I could say if the cost is worth it to them.
So the one that bugs me in the marketplace, though, has to be the code minimum sheathing. And, you know, I don't want to call out any particular builder and I don't want to call out any manufacturer because they've already sent me a cease and desist letter at least once. But the sheathings that are made from cardboard, which a lot of production builders are using, every time I see those, I think, how do you possibly waterproof and air seal those? But then from your perspective, how could that house possibly withstand much racking at all when it's a cardboard sheathed house? versus a solid sheath house?
Well, the provisions in the code are they're actually quite lengthy for ways to brace houses. You know, the old school way of doing it, and it's still allowed in practice today, is to let in a 1x4.
Yeah.
A diagonal 1x4, you drive by a new house under construction and look back in the garage, you're likely to see a let in 1x4. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you see coil strapping, mm-hmm. you know, in an X configuration.
Yep.
These are all accepted methods of bracing a house. Mm-hmm. This is one area where we don't even offer it as an option. We insist that we sheath houses in OSB.
Yeah.
And we're talking about upgrades that offer value. In our mind, that's
a great one.
No doubt there's value there. Unfortunately, now OSB is over $50 a sheet. Golly, so it's quite a
that's
cost.
Crazy.
2 years ago, it was $8 a sheet. So it's easy to sell it.
I was going
to
say $10 a sheet.
Yeah. It was much, much less. So I would imagine a homeowner today might ask the question or push back a little more than they used to. But it's so forgiving. This goes back to the roof overhang and waterproofing comment.
Yeah.
If you see the house in OSB, it makes up for so many other possible shortcomings or accidents, you know, during framing that cardboard sheathing is just would never provide any benefit to.
Yeah. And the other thing with cardboard sheathing that I see a lot that always bugs me is if you go on a production builder job site, the trades are using hammers to poke holes in that sheathing a lot, you know, plumbers, electricians, and this is not a dig on plumbers and electricians. I'm sure it has a function of, you know, the companies that they work for telling them they need to hurry or whatever. But with OSB, you can't hit it with a hammer and make a hole. You have to get a drill out. And now you have a defined surface that you can water and air seal properly. Whereas that cardboard sheathing, once you start it ripping, it's just never going to seal correctly. And, you know, that can of spray foam is not doing it. It's not making up what it needs to do.
Agreed. And we were talking about this continuous load path. I should emphasize this. Either with you're using trusses or rafters sitting on the top plate of the wall, mm-hmm. they need to be secured to the wall. And then the wall needs to be secured to the foundation to resist wind forces, overturning, uplift. Well, OSB handles a lot of that. I mean, it connects the top plate of the wall down to the bottom plate.
That's right.
Without that, to do it correctly, you would need to attach the rafter to the top plate, the mm-hmm. top plate to the stud to the bottom plate, and the bottom plate to the foundation.
Yeah.
I don't think that's happening mm-hmm. in a lot of these projects with cardboard sheathing on
them.
No,
it's not.
Now, with OSB, done. I mean, it's a great load path. Ties it all together.
Yeah. All right. So let's set the money aside for a second, knowing that as this is published, things are crazy commodity-wise. 5 years, 3 years ago when commodities were a little more normalized, so to speak, I have a builder friend of mine that told me that he was sheathing his houses, and these are nice houses, don't get me wrong, in all 3/4 plywood because he wanted to be able to have his mason not have to find a stud for a brick tie or other anchors. What do you think about that as a strategy?
I suspect I know the builder because if it's not the same one, I know another person using the same strategy. And I really like it. I consider this person, he's a student of construction science. Mm-hmm. He's always learning.
Yep.
So every time I get a chance to talk to him on a job site, I ask what their current practices are. And he explained to me his current favorite wall assembly is, I think, no insulation in the stud cavity, a 3/4-inch sheathing, mm-hmm. peel and stick, foil faced. Waterproofing, air barrier, and then exterior insulation on top of that.
Yeah.
And this allows them, because of all the exterior insulation, they don't have to try to find the stud behind it. They just drill right into it. I think it's a great system.
It's a really smart system. We won't name this builder to allow them to be a little anonymous, but amazing builder I've learned a ton from. And just to break down that assembly real fast, so it really could be 2x4 or 2x6 construction at that point, right? Because we maybe don't need the extra 2x6 depth if we are knowing that the bay is not going to be insulated. And then 3/4, typically plywood, real plywood sheathing, not OSB. On top of that, remember, this is a Texas-based builder in climate zone 2A. They're using a foil-faced peel and stick product, which I will name because it's one of our show sponsors. That's Polywall, soon to be called Polyguards product. It's called Lumiflash. I've used it a bunch. It is a bomber product. It's a very thick, like 40 mil thick, very kind of rubbery and gaskety feeling. The aluminum on the outside also makes it UV resistant for long construction periods. So in fact, they have a 2-year exposure limit. So you could have long construction cycles. And then they're doing, I can't remember what type of salt or what type of exterior insulation, but basically enough to get the code approved insulation 100% on the outside of the building, which now you've limited all the thermal bridges. There's no worry about, you know, how do I insulate this header or what am I going to do with these thermal bridges and double top plates or whatever. Solid continuous insulation. And then what you're saying, because they've got that three-quarter sheathing, they can use, let's say, a screw product to screw through that insulation, not worry where the studs are. And as long as that plywood's fastened attached or attached to the studs correctly, that anchor's then going to do its job, right?
That's right.
I say that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Man, that's such a cool assembly. Now, that is a more expensive wall in some respects, but in other respects, it's a slightly maybe less expensive wall because now maybe we're using 2x4s instead of 2x6s. We're not putting any inside insulation in. We're not worried about spray foam, let's say, for air tightness inside the wall cavity. We have a blank wall cavity that also gives us a little extra durability in the building because now I've got this, this is a nerdy term I learned a few years ago, this hygric buffer capacity of the wall, which is a fancy term for saying those 2x4s and the real plywood can soak up a lot of moisture if there was a leak through that wall and slowly let it out over time without there being a problem. And so that's a great assembly. I really like that. I would like to build a house like that too.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good. I don't know how often, I was curious about this as they explained it, how often they want the, as you just said, the stud cavity open so that it can dry. And there's other reasons too. I mean, expansion, I suppose, running wires and things like that, but mainly it's so that it can dry.
Yeah.
And you know, I wasn't sure how often that was necessary, but we have a project that was less than 10 years old, all engineered framing, studs, everything were LVLs. I mean, great architect, great builder. Everything went perfect on this team. Beautiful house. No overhangs. And they had a little steel plate detail at the head of the window on the exterior with stucco on the outside. And after about 6 or 7 years, the owner saw a little bit of mold growth on the interior plaster wall, and we opened it up. Where the stud had been, there was spray foam insulation, and the stud had vanished. I mean, among the spray foam, there was the cavity where the stud used to be, and it was only the two studs at the window, and they were gone. A little moisture was going in there, and I don't know where the stud went. But it was just and down at the bottom, you could see a little rotted remnant of the stud. So fortunately, it was a small little isolated condition where the head of the window, a little bit of water was getting in. So it was easily correctable. But it really opened my eyes to the importance of not concentrating moisture in one small little area and not letting it escape. I mean, we can see what happens.
So I have my own horror story about a pretty similar incident. The very first time I used LSL studs, it was not one that you engineered. It was a lake house that had an exterior screen porch, unconditioned porch area with just screens in the windows. And I was still using a white house wrap at the time for waterproofing. So picture this porch with all these punched openings in it, and water could get in through the windows and sit there on the sills. And I used kind of standard old school waterproofing methods. And I framed it in LSLs because it was real tall. It was like 16 foot tall in this space. Well, some water had gotten in, and where the window sill was, there was no window. It was just screened opening. Water had gotten in there, but there was no easy path for that water to get out. And even though there was no insulation, the rate of wetting exceeded the rate of drying. And I got the call from the homeowner maybe 3 or 4 years after they moved in saying, hey, we're going to sell our house and we're seeing a bunch of like cracked caulking and movement in these redwood jams that you made as like openings for screens. And I said, oh, that's weird. Let me come out and take a look. Well, I put my rot detector in there, which also happens to be my 3-inch Benchmade, and stuck it into the window frame. And wouldn't you know, I was sunk up to the hilt. And I had that sinking in the pit of my stomach feeling like, oh, I totally messed this up. So I brought my crew out. I made a video about it because I was so distraught by what I had done. And I took it all apart. And sure enough, those LSLs that had gotten wet in some way, they were mush after 3 or 4 years. Absolutely structurally failed. I had to replace every one of those studs that had gotten wet. Whereas, interestingly enough, there was a couple of studs in a few places, like in corners, that I used regular studs for whatever reason. Those had gotten wet and looked a little soft, but had nowhere near the structural failure that the LSLs had experienced. So it just makes me go, look, if I'm going to use engineered lumber, which I do like engineered lumber, my whole house is framed with it, we really need to be extra cautious about our waterproofing and not let even small amounts of water in those stud bays, because they're not nearly as resilient as those 2x4s right there that have served us as builders and engineers for the last 200 plus years in America, right?
Well, to circle back, like I said, my dad and I have a friendly conversation about building systems. I could hear him right now saying, see, that's why you use ICFs. Don't have to worry about that. But the wood does have its shortcomings, but it also has solutions to it.
You know?
So it's the detailing, the waterproofing, the flashing, it's so critical.
Yeah.
Well, and just the overall architectural design too, as we said earlier.
And I would tell you, ICFs are great, and you're right, there's nothing to rot there or go away on ICFs. On the other hand, they're not particularly easy to waterproof, and there's not a lot of products in the marketplace for waterproofing ICF. Polywall, Polyguard, that Texas-based company I mentioned, makes some specific products for waterproofing, but you have to be real cautious, because if you use an asphaltic-based peel and stick, let's say, on ICF, you may not realize this the day you install it, but that asphalt is going to eat away the what is the insulation type on those ICS? I can't think of the white foam coffee cup foam. It's not polyiso, but EPS foam. Asphalt will eat EPS foam. So you could put it on, and then all of a sudden you realize, well, actually, I ate through the foam because the asphalt was chemically reacting with the EPS. So you got to use a water-based product that won't eat away. And they're just generally harder to work with, right? Peel and sticks generally don't stick to them. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to use a sheet applied good like you might on a house with OSB. Your standard white house wrap works great on OSB and will help waterproof it. It may not do a good job air sealing, but at least you can waterproof it. On the other hand, ICF has a few intricacies, and you need to be a little more cautious about it. Plus, if water gets past that EPS layer and hits the concrete, well, now you might have a leak that came in over here and shows itself 20 feet over there. So it's a tricky product to work with in my mind.
Yep, agreed.
It has some intricacies to it. Thinking back on my house, Whit, I've always wondered, like, would I frame it again in all LVLs, or would I recommend that to a client? Before I answer what I would say, what would you say? You've saw my house under construction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm a big fan, but I'm still a frugal engineer at the end of the day, and I still like efficiencies where we can find them. So I really don't have any issue with solids on lumber up to certain lengths. I typically would not recommend LVLs. It wouldn't become my default recommendation on a house with a 10-foot plate. I'm completely comfortable with two by six studs, 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
There are areas where they're better. And certainly whenever we get the taller walls, we could frame them with solid sawn lumber, a 16 foot tall wall.
Yeah.
But when we start looking at that, I prefer the engineered lumber products. They're straighter. There's much less cull.
Yeah.
They're stronger. So there are times when I won't insist on it, but I would highly recommend it to the builder. And then if they disagree with me, we could have a conversation about it. But it would be unusual for us, for our base recommendation to be all engineered lumber.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what I would say as well, that, my house is only 9-foot ceilings, first floor and second floor. And I used all these LVL studs, which are not inexpensive. You know, they're 2-point-something the cost of a standard stud, maybe even 3, which is already crazy expensive in today's market. It wasn't as much when I framed my house 2 years ago. But I just don't know that it's worth it for that. I was going for this extreme straightness, and I want my drywall to be nice and smooth, which it has been. I just don't think that it matters. I think if I were to build that house today, I'd go back to just standard 2x SPF material. However, the one place I have really liked it with, and I'm curious if this made a difference in your design, is I can't remember if my rafters on my second story are 2x8. Or 2x10. They're actually not 2x because they're whatever the engineer. It's like 1.75-inch, right?
That's right.
By 7.5, let's say. Were you able to get a much longer span out of that compared to solids on lumber?
Yeah, definitely. Back to being a frugal engineer, if we're using an engineered wood product, we try to take full advantage of its capabilities, and that means we can space them further apart. Mm-hmm. You know, if we needed rafters at 16 inches on center with a 2x8, maybe we can space these at 24, or we can span further with them. So certainly, we try to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, my second-story attic is one of my favorite places in my whole house, and almost everybody who visits me who's, you know, an out-of-towner or a builder, I always take them up to that attic with, because I think that attic that you designed and my guys built for me is one of the coolest things. You know, it feels like a 1950s framed or 1940s or 30s framed house, except that all the studs are this yellow plywood.
it's a really neat space. I wish we could see more of them.
And so open, too. I mean, we put some collar ties at the very top. And then you use the ceiling joists, which were lag screwed into the rafters. And then if I remember correctly, the ridge is also structurally tied together to basically make a big truss out of this triangle. And so now I've got this huge open space. I've got great storage up there. I've got suitcases and Christmas ornaments and my wife's plastic 1970s nativity set that she got from a 90-year-old who was moving out of her house, all stored up there. My wife's even got a wrapping station up there now because she loves to wrap gifts for people. She made it right over one of the lights over by my Zender ERV. I mean, that attic is just, it's because it's also air conditioned, it's as good as another room in my house, mm-hmm. or better.
Oh, it's such a nice space. There's a little premium associated with framing that way. I mean, the concept itself is very simple, mm-hmm. but you have to have deeper rafters to span that longer distance.
Right.
I'm very amazed at the volume home community and how well they can brace a roof. Those guys can frame a whole large house with nothing more than a 2x6 rafter.
Dang.
You know, and so often, I mean, we kind of use a 2x8 as our minimum. Not mm-hmm. always, but a lot of yeah. times, because we'll have longer spans. But if you go out on those jobs and look at what they can do with a 2x4 and a 2x6, it's really very impressive. They're really efficient with it. But when you get up in the attic, what you find is just that it's complete bracing, rafter bracing everywhere. Yeah. So you lose all that space.
Yeah.
There's an efficiency in the material you're using,
yep.
because you're using a lot of smaller pieces instead of fewer larger pieces. Yeah. But that space is kind of rendered unusable.
Yeah. So. Now, on the other hand, though, you can specify to your truss engineer to do some storage trusses, which, if you're not familiar with that, I always think of that as an engineered truss. Let's say, for instance, hopefully I'll be able to show this on camera at some point. I'm working with Builders First Source on a ready frame house, and Luke Marks, who is one of my project managers, is going to build that as his personal house. And we're going to tell the BFS truss engineer to make storage trusses for the second floor, where it'll probably be some version of a mix of 2x4 and 2x6s. But he's going to have a bottom area that he'll be able to sheathe, a bottom plate, or a ceiling joist that will have some kind of plywood over top. And hopefully like a 8-foot wide by maybe 6-foot tall square box opening in the center of the truss that he can have one mechanical system and then also a bunch of Christmas storage. And then I'm assuming those would be, what are those? Are those normally 16 inch or 24 inch on center?
24.
Okay.
Almost always. Yeah.
So I wonder what, I mean, I don't know for sure, but what do you think the biggest space he could get out of that is? You know, you haven't seen the plans, obviously. You don't know, but have you seen some of those storage trusses?
Oh, yeah.
That are pretty good?
We work with them often. I'm always impressed with the capabilities of these truss manufacturers. I mean, more and more so every day. There was a time when we were of the opinion that in order to use roof trusses, the roof itself needed to be a simple geometry, mm-hmm. you know, simple ridges and maybe a hip here or there. But
yep.
for the most part, in order for truss to be a viable option, that should be the layout.
Yeah.
Now, once again, if you go to a volume home community and we're familiar with those roof layouts, there's lots of hips and valleys and dormers and all types of things to give them some, you know, design to those roofs. They can truss those roofs all day long. There's not two trusses that are the same on one of those roofs.
That's amazing. I mean,
so it's, yeah, you look at it and there's going to be 60 trusses, everyone unique. And when they sheathe it, it looks so simple on the outside.
Yeah.
But before they sheathe it, you don't realize that a lot of coordination went into making that roof. And to your point, you know, they can put a large attic block out in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big fan. I mean, yeah, I think it's a really good system. It's economical, no waste.
Yep.
You know, on the job site, there's no waste. They use low grade wood where they don't need the high strength.
Yeah.
So a lot of number three grade 2x4s go into those trusses,
which works just fine in that situation.
Sure. Sure. And then they put the number one or select structural where they need to.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good product.
And in Texas, where we are, when was the last time you went to a job site for a custom home and didn't see engineered floor trusses, meaning 2x4 engineered trusses, right?
It's not common. Every now and then we'll still see some TJIs on jobs when they need, those are usually more remote areas where they're worried that they might need to do some trimming or might get one that doesn't fit. And so they'll use TJIs because they have a little bit more adaptability with them. But otherwise it's almost completely engineered floor trusses.
Yeah. I mean, BFS, Builders FirstSource, doing the trusses for this floor. And I think we've got 18 inch space, 24 inch on center for those. And we'll end up capping it with either 3/4 inch and 1/8 material. And that makes a super strong, stiff floor. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that that'll all get done by a truss engineer, not your office, which is kind of interesting to have two different engineers on the project.
That's right. In a commercial job, that's actually very common. There's so many things that are deferred designs, storefront systems, roof joists, light gauge metal studs often are deferred.
Yep.
But in a home, the engineer of record will handle most all the structural design, but the trusses will be a deferred design. So we will give them the loads that we want them to design the trusses for, the criteria in the construction documents.
Yep.
They provide shop drawings. They're sent to us to review, and then they'll ultimately fabricate the trusses off those.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so cool how that's really taken over in Texas. I suspect other markets will be coming that way. But I do see still a lot of engineered I-joists, and I've even seen some solid sawn lumber out there still in some houses. My parents built a house going on 20 years ago now with solid sawn lumber back in Pittsburgh. And man, their floors are so bouncy. It's terrible. I almost shudder to go upstairs in the house remembering every time I'm there how much their furniture bounces when I walk by. You know, that builder is no longer, he had a heart attack on the job. On another project besides my parents, but I wish that I could have gone back and told Gary to make a change from that solid sawn lumber.
You could get a much better performing floor.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we probably should wrap it up. Huge thank you for taking time out of your day. Whit Smith with Smith Structural Engineering here in Austin, Texas. By the way, don't call his office. Whit is thoroughly busy with me and several other builders like me that dominate his time. And I don't give his name or number out to people who call me. In fact, Whit, I will have you know that someone called me today and asked for an engineering rec for whatever. And I was like, man, I don't know who to recommend. I'm so sorry. Find someone locally. Go in and meet them. Your office is crazy busy. And I know you have other competitors in town that are also busy. But I would recommend for builders, remodelers out there, find the Whit Smith in your town, develop that relationship, send all of your projects to the same engineer so that now I even forgot that Whit had worked with us on two or three of these projects because I've worked with them for so long. He's our 100% first choice on everything. And we have a relationship so that he knows kind of what I expect. We have an embedded language together. I trust his designs. And no longer do I need to, not that I ever had to with your office per se, but sometimes I can remember designs that would come back and I'd be like, really? Number 7 rebar in this scenario or this soil? I got to make an appointment and go see them. Oh, why did you do that? Oh, maybe we could do this instead. We still do that some, right, where we banter back and forth, but way less now that we've known each other and worked together. His office and his people know my project managers, know what our preferences and likes are. Know that we're okay spending a little more to get a stiffer floor or to get this or that out of our jobs. So my recommendation to you would be don't call Smith Structural, but find the Smith Structural with smart engineers in your town that you can have a long-term relationship with. Because as a builder, that is just like any other relationship in my world, a huge part of making my business successful is having a really good engineering company to work with on all my projects. That being said, thank you so much, Whit. Any parting thoughts you need to throw out there for
no,
the crew?
No, sir. It's always a pleasure. Hope to many more years of working together.
Amen. For sure, brother. Many more years indeed. All right, guys. If you're not currently a subscriber, hit that subscribe button below. You know, we're publishing the podcast now every Friday. We're on season 2. It's been a lot of fun to meet a lot of you at job sites and at trade shows and to hear that the podcast has been helpful for you. I've really enjoyed it. I'd love to get your feedback. So drop me a line, shoot me an Instagram direct message. I try to reply to as many of those as possible. But we've got more here on season two coming out. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on the Build Show podcast.